We have a territory, we have a language, and we are a group of people. That word is nation. We are a nation.
We want to have a government-to-government relationship with the state and the federal government, that we are sovereign people, and we're going to be sovereign as long as we live.
Sovereignty is a word used to describe the rising tide of Alaska Native self-determination. Native peoples are reaching far into the past for answers to control their own future. In this program, we look at self-determination and what it means to Alaska Natives. This is Holding Our Ground.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pirtle Law Firm.
Our government has existed since time immemorial. There has been a crying need to reestablish the tribal government. The government that now exists, the federal and the state government, is not our way of government. The elders are saying, reestablish your tribal governments. Make your own laws. Practice your self-determination as your ancestors have practiced it.
Willie Kasaili is one of the leaders of the Native Sovereignty Movement. He and other people in his village of Akiachuk are dissolving their state-chartered city government and handing the responsibilities over to the native government. It is a move people in other villages want to make. The sovereignty movement is not new. It is based on the law of perpetual occupancy and dates back thousands of years. Mike Albert from the West Coast village of Tununak.
People living in New York or any other city came into that city from different part of the world. And when they get to that city, they combine their cultures, and that's how they make their own constitutions. But the native people have lived here in Alaska, who knows when, thousands of years. And today, we are still living on the same country, same areas. This is where we have our real sovereign power.
Earlier in this century, no one questioned the right of Native peoples to rule themselves and use the land freely. Now people are feeling the loss of these freedoms. The recent events of Alaska statehood and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act have brought new laws, governments, and organizations. The effect has weakened the position of many Native governments. When Natives speak of sovereignty or self-determination, they speak of carrying on their customs, traditions, subsistence activities, and keeping the land. Judge Thomas Berger.
I think that people in the bush want a greater measure of control over their lives, their communities, and their land. And they've decided that the best way to achieve that goal is by asserting native sovereignty. Now, that doesn't mean that they want to set up little nation states throughout Alaska and send delegates to the United Nations. What it means is that the Alaska Natives who live in these villages want to assert their right as distinct political communities, going back hundreds of years, to govern themselves. We're talking about something that's as American as apple pie.
The latest surge of Native self-determination stems from the realization that Native lands could be lost, along with many subsistence activities. Alaska's natives have been forced to think of their traditional land as commercial real estate. Previously, it could not be bought or sold. Land was considered something to use, not to own. Claude de Mintoff.
Used to be the land belonged to everybody. Nobody owned the land. We were just guests on this land.
The rights to use a land were handed down through generations. Alaska Natives had their own traditional boundaries learned from childhood. Sheldon Ketchetag of Unalakleet.
I learned about them as a very young child. Traditionally, we don't fish on that side of that line, imaginary line. You know, your inquisitive mind, when you're that young, is, who made that boundaries? Oh, it's old. I don't know who did it. Does Grandpa know? No, Grandpa don't know who did it, but it's there. And it's a statement of fact. And you accept it as such. And you grow up with it, and you abide by it.
The first European explorers that came to Alaska were Russians. They set up a handful of forts and trading posts, beginning in the late 1700s, much as the Hudson Bay Company did in Canada. Rudolph Williams of the Monarch.
And when the Russians came,
translated by Axel Johnson,
they found Alaska, they came to our land, and they found our people, the Eskimo people. And they claimed this land that belonged to our forefathers from time immemorial. And how they claimed it is something they did not understand and still do not understand.
In 1867, Russia sold Alaska to United States $7.2 million.
After the Russians had come and claimed this land without a fight or anything, without asking the people if they could sell it or not, they just went ahead and sold this land that belonged to our forefathers and to the Eskimo people to what they call the United States.
But what did the United States buy? The Moscow daily Narodny Golos asked the same question editorially on April the 5th, 1867.
For what El Dorado does the United States pay us $7 million? For the metropolis of Sitka, consisting of several barbaric country houses and the residence of the colonial governor, and also for several half-century-old windjammers and steamships.
Evidence suggests that the Russians thought they were selling only their forts and a few steamships. On the other hand, U.S. congressmen never had any doubts about what they were buying when they approved the Alaska Purchase, the entire land of Alaska. A military dispatch listed strategic harbors between the U.S. mainland and the Orient. Congress was aware of the minerals, fish, and fur in Alaska. One report suggested enough gold could be mined out of Alaska in 1 year to equal the purchase price. Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts was largely responsible for getting the Alaska Purchase through Congress, but he expressed serious reservations that the transaction took place without the knowledge and consent of Alaska's native peoples. Alaska natives still talk about the sale of Alaska as if it were yesterday and something can be done to change it. John Howard Sr. from Angoon.
So many meetings I heard that the Russians sold Alaska to the United States. The fact is I've questioned it, who did the Russians buy it from that they can sell the Alaska over the counter like a toy. I've never did get a reply on that.
I am against
Willie Kasai,
the sale of Alaska from Russia to the United States because they did not own it. They had not the right to sell the land. We have legitimate entitled to the land that we are talking about. Every village had a certain jurisdiction and was mainly based on occupancy and use. These things have significance.
Bye.
In 1934, Congress passed the IRA, or Indian Reorganization Act, designed to streamline the Department of Interior's dealings with native peoples. In the late 1930s and early 40s, over 40 Alaska Native communities adopted constitutions under the IRA. Those constitutions formalized traditional governments. Mike Halbert.
Thousands of years back, from time no one knows, although Native people had no written laws, they had their own laws and their own government. Some years back, before Alaska became the state, we had our own form of government, which is IRA.
As villages formalized traditional governments, Alaska's strategic importance during World War II brought thousands of troops. In 1959, Alaska gained statehood. Professor Russell Barsh suggests that event was illegal under international law.
The United States went to the United Nations and asked for United Nations permission to make Alaska a state. Why do you suppose they did that? The reason is because the United States was seriously concerned that the United Nations might classify Alaska as an overseas colony, a non-white colony. It's one territory that the United States held that was clearly geographically separate as well as ethnically distinct, and in which the native population was subjected to external control. The so-called decolonization resolution, which is the basis of United Nations law on colonies, defines a colony as a territory which is geographically separate and ethnically distinct.
Roughly 10 years after statehood, the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline was proposed. Native land claims had to be settled since it crossed native lands. In 1971, Congress passed ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
The Land Claims Act was passed because the oil companies wanted it.
Claude Dimintoff.
They wanted a corridor for the pipeline. They wanted the issue of the land settled so that they could make their oil on the North Slope to money markets in the South.
Governor Egan and his top administrators were anxious to select lands granted under statehood. Alaska Natives wanted recognition for their Aboriginal lands. Don Wright was the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives Association, the group that worked with Congress on a Claims Act. He wrote to President Nixon 8 months before the law passed.
Because of our use and occupancies of the land in Alaska for literally thousands of years, the Alaska Natives have valid Indian title to roughly 375 million acres of land in Alaska. This title has never been extinguished by the United States since it negotiated with Russia and signed the Treaty of Cession in 1867.
In 1971, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act extinguished all Aboriginal land title. The Act remained silent about Native governments.
We characterize the Alaska sovereign people on an equal basis with those in all of Europe, wherein there are dozens of nations, sovereign nations.
Some legal experts say that Congress has the power to do anything it wants, including extinguishing Aboriginal rights. University of Maryland professor Henry Hsu disagrees.
The sort of language that you find in ANCSA says things like, all Aboriginal titles are hereby extinguished. Well, I don't know. And if they're based on genuine human rights, they're not the sort of thing that governments can extinguish. I mean, the whole point about human rights is that they are prior to the decisions of governments. And, I mean, this is as American an idea as you can get. I mean, that was the whole point about the American Revolution.
When Alaska Natives gave up 90% of Alaska, Congress assigned the remaining 10% to profit-making Native corporations, along with about $963 million. The lands became private property of the newly created corporations, not native governments. The largest assets of most corporations are lands. The lands are mostly remote and used mainly for subsistence. Sheldon Kachetu believes the power of native governments remains in place, even though the lands are not owned by the native governments.
Section F. No provision of this act shall be construed to constitute a jurisdictional act. Therefore, we as tribal governments have no limitation to our jurisdiction. There is nothing in the state, there is nothing in the federal government that says there is a limitation. The only limitation that we as tribal governments have is those that we have imposed on ourselves, and these are the ones that we have abided by since time immemorial, our traditional tribal boundaries.
There are two types of tribal governments, the IRA, formalized by the U.S. government, and the traditional governments, which are less formalized but have essentially the same rights. Like other governments, they do not lose their lands if they are broke. They can also pass laws and establish a court system. Native governments exercise their power because they are a continuing political group. One becomes a lifelong member at birth. Corporations have shareholders, but they include only those Alaskans born before the act passed. Those born after 1971 would not receive shares except through inheritance. If the lands are lost, the rights to subsistence hunting and fishing may also disappear. The land and subsistence way of life are basics that Native peoples are unwilling to risk. Charlie Ka'iriwak is the new president of the United Tribes of Alaska, a statewide organization of tribal governments.
The only way that I believe that we can salvage the land is by going through the tribal governments. And I propose that the land be separated from the corporations and be given to the tribal governments, because that is where the ultimate authority lies, and that's who the true landowners are.
Many people have claimed that ANCSA was done without their consent, but they are careful to give credit to those few who did work to land claim settlement. Harvey Samuelson of Dillingham.
I know that native land claims, it wasn't perfect in 1971 since we signed it, but that was the best we could compromise at that time with the senators, Congress, state of Alaska, and us. Prior to 1971, all the natives I talked to, they wanted the land settlement of some sort. We knew it wasn't perfect, but that was the best we could compromise at that time.
No one in Congress or Alaska was thinking seriously about reservations, since they were regarded as failures in much of the continental United States. Metlakatla is an Indian reservation in southeast Alaska that did not participate in ANCSA. People there feel they made the right decision. They retain ownership of Annette Island, plus an exclusive fishing zone surrounding the island. These rights would have been lost had they become part of ANCSA. There were five other reservations besides Metlakatla, but they became part of ANCSA. All of the Vinitai Reservation shareholders turned their shares over to the tribal government. Still, the Vinitai tribal government doesn't have the recognition it wants. The Secretary of Interior has refused to take their lands into trust like lands in Metlakatla. The state of Alaska has refused to recognize Vinitai as Indian country, according to Don Wright, who advises the Vinitai Tribal Council.
The tribe has attempted to deal with the state of Alaska, which it has the legislative authority to do, on a one-to-one basis, a government-to-government basis, and the state administrations since 1971 have refused to recognize the sovereign status the tribal status of the Veenatai. We have letters from the President of the United States and from the Commissioner of Indian Affairs and the Area Director that say we definitely are a tribal government. The Veenatai is definitely a tribal government and entitled to all of the immunities and all of the benefits of any other tribe in the United States.
ANCSA has been criticized for remaining silent about sovereignty. Spud Williams sat omission as confirming the power of native governments.
There was nothing in the act that spoke to native governments because there was no intention of any of the drafters that those functions would be monkeyed with. I mean, you're talking of governments that are 6,000 years old or even older. And when you consider an American government that's only, just a few hundred years old, it's a little incredulous today that the state or anyone would be challenging those governments as being legal governments or legal entities.
Oscar Quagley of Bethel feels that ANCSA illegally bypassed native governments.
I think Congress and a whole lot of people that were in positions to make a decision forgot all about our valid existing rights as a people. They were looking out for the valid existing rights of the miners, the homesteaders, and everybody else, trappers, and whoever had access to land. Those that have grown up where organization is very important and ownership of land is important, which to us was not the way that we operated. I think the U.S. Congress has forgotten the U.S. Constitution as well as many laws that have given us the right to tribal sovereignty. And yet now they're refusing to even acknowledge that Alaskan villages should be allowed to set up their own tribal governments.
ANCSA brought monumental changes to the political structure of villages. Traditional decision makers are frequently not the same leaders who run the corporations. The state of Alaska added another dimension, distributing state services and funds through municipal governments. For villagers who have a tribal government and no municipal government, there is a $100,000 limit on state distributions.
There are 55
Judge Thomas Berger
villages in Alaska where there is no municipality. And there are native and non-native people living there. I've been to those places. So what happens with state money that should go to those villages? It goes to the tribal government, and the tribal government distributes it among natives and non-natives. It's happening now.
In North America, the areas indigenous peoples control are called Indian country. It is a lawyer's argument whether there is Indian country in Alaska. Some legal experts say native governments have jurisdiction only over reservations. ANCSA further complicated the area of jurisdiction.
In the Claims Settlement Act,
Spud Williams,
whether by design or accident, they took the very ground underneath the communities and made sure that that went to a municipal entity. The very core of the towns have to be given to a state municipal government. In those villages that still have tribal governments and no municipal government, it has to be given to the state in trust for a future municipal government. So the big problem with dissolving a city is how do we get the land back to the IRA? Maybe that will be the only solution. Just to grab the bull by the horns, kick out the municipal governments, and just go back to pure tribal governments.
Many non-natives wonder how they will be affected by tribal governments. Judge Thomas Berger.
There are ways of ensuring that non-native people can participate in the decision-making. The legislation that applies to Metlakatla now says that the tribal government shall set up a tribally chartered corporation in which non-natives shall be admitted to membership so that they can vote on matters relating to availability of municipal services to all the people in the village. I don't think that non-native Alaskans need be frightened by the suggestion that they are going to be second-class citizens wherever you have a village that has a tribal government. They may not be able to vote for tribal chairman, but there are ways, and they are well known in the United States for ensuring that when it comes to the distribution of services to them, to natives and non-natives through the tribal government, they can participate in the decision making. It isn't something strange and un-American. Tribal government is something that is part of the American system. It's been with us in the United States and in Canada for more than a century.
Judge Berger is recommending a complete overhaul of ANCSA. He feels tribal governments are the best bet. The Alaska Federation of Natives Incorporated is an organization of the 12 large regional corporations. They are seeking minor adjustments to give corporations greater flexibility within ANCSA. UTA, United Tribes of Alaska, is looking for major changes in ANCSA, giving tribal governments an important role. The two large organizations have one major point in common: allowing corporations to transfer lands to tribal governments. Akiachuk and two other nearby villages have formed the Upete Nation and have taken control of education as well as other municipal services. If Akiachuk succeeds, it is likely more villages will follow. In an upcoming program, we will see how the reality of sovereignty works in tribal governments and in state charter boroughs like the North Slope. Please join us for Holding Our Ground. This is Adeline Raybaugh. This program is produced by Jim Sykes, written by Jeff Berliner, edited and researched by Sue Burris. Mary Kansiewicz is our script consultant. Special thanks to the community of Gamble for dancing and singing, and also special thanks to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. For more information about this and other programs in this series, write to Western Media Concepts, P.O. Box 215, Anchorage, Alaska, 99510. Holding Our Ground is a production of Western Media Concepts, which is solely responsible for the content.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.